forward, it's going to be only America first. America first.
Says this country's 45th president, Donald J. Trump. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. He takes office amid serious questions about his vision of the U.S. role in the world. He enters the White House with low approval ratings, hovering around 40%, lingering scars from a deeply divisive election campaign. But as president, Mr. Trump told American workers and families, the cavalry is on the way, and a love of country will be our binding force.
A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions. It's time to remember that old wisdom our soldiers will never forget, that whether we are black or brown or white, we all bleed the same red blood of patriots.
Where do we stand? We're joined now by Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, who's on the line with us from the nation's capital. Todd, your thoughts?
Well, John, it was a brief speech, as you said, and I thought it was a speech that really straddled two big places for Donald Trump. A lot of the similar campaign rhetoric, as you said, there were one or two policy promises, but a real kind of reappeal, telling his supporters that he was putting Washington in their hands, saying they were no longer going to be forgotten. And then towards the end, some of the loftier, at times even Lincoln-esque language of a divided people, you know, living under the same sky with the same dreams, he said, even under the same God. This invokes Abraham Lincoln, who observed that both the North and the South prayed to the same God. He was Reagan-esque at other times when Donald Trump said that the United States would be a shining example to other nations that they could follow, that shining city on the hill that Ronald Reagan so famously invoked for the American people. And then at other times, really sort of seemed to be contrasting with President Obama and even other presidents who said before him to say that the time of Washington forgetting about the people was over, the time of Washington leaving cities to rot and factories to rust and jobs to go overseas and forgetting about the people, that was over, placing himself squarely in the ranks of his own supporters. And I just want to say, John, it's an important moment for any politician. Donald Trump, as you said, is now President Trump, the 45th president, and everything changes for Donald Trump now. The campaign is over. The president-elect phase is over. The decisions are his. The political ownership is his. The need to sway Congress is his. The low approval rating, frankly, is his. And the challenge of keeping members of Congress who worry about their own re-elections, their own political fortune, and their own ideologies is also his now. Everything changes from this moment.
As you say, Todd, the mission of Donald Trump today was to reach out to those people who were his constituency, that middle class that has felt so neglected and forgotten by the Washington government. And he explicitly called for a transfer of power away from Washington, D.C., back to the people. He talked about gangs and drugs in American cities. He talked about a bolstering of the military to make it safer. But he also talked about a redirecting of wealth to rebuild America's infrastructure, very much in keeping with the themes that were powerful for the middle class during the campaign. Foreign thieves impoverished the American middle class, and that will change. It will be America first from now on. Buy American, hire American. That's the theme. He did declare that he will eradicate Islamic radicalism from the earth, and he called for an end of American carnage, which I didn't quite understand, but certainly for what is normally a very positive moment. Inaugural speeches tend to be positive moments, forward-thinking moments. This contained a lot of negativity, a lot of sense that America is really in bad shape right now. Joining us now, Carolyn Ryan, senior editor for politics from our partner, The New York Times. Carolyn, what do you think of what's happened so far, what we've heard from Donald Trump, and what it says about the next 4 years?
So many things are striking to me about this speech. One, just to pick up on your point, there was a bellicosity about some of the language, the carnage, the other countries stealing our companies, and sort of there was almost sort of a warlike footing on this issue. The other thing that was quite striking to me, given that Donald Trump, his identity, his life has been fairly secular I think the influence of the conservative movement and some of the pastors he's been surrounding himself with, the repeated invocations of God. The other thing that was quite dramatic to me was that there was very little reaching out to those who didn't vote for him, didn't support him. There was a lot of language that was essentially from his rallies, from his campaign. And there was his identity as a builder of things really came through, that was sort of the potent thread throughout, that he's calling on people to build a new America, and that seemed like the message. But there was no, for example, acknowledgement of Hillary Clinton. There was nothing deep said to people who didn't support him or are worried about the future of the country. And remember, that's a fairly significant number of people who are listening.
Well, for the people who are descending on Washington, even as we speak, to be a part of this Women's March tomorrow, there was no discussion of any of the gender issues that were so powerful during the campaign. But he did set up a kind of philosophical construct that the way to become a diverse and peaceful and not racially divided nation is for everyone to be a patriot, and that it is our patriotism that will bring us together. Glenn Coffey is a member of the Oklahoma State Senate from 1999 to 2010. He's now a lawyer at Glenn Coffey and Associates. Glenn, we're going to see you next week in Oklahoma as we spend some time in Oklahoma thinking about the inauguration and about the places where the middle class lives. What do you think about the address, and what do you think about some of the language that Donald Trump has used here?
Well, John, thanks for having me. And I think it was a fascinating speech. I agree with Todd's characterization. There were echoes of Lincoln's second inaugural. There was the Shining Hill reference to Reagan. But I also think there are references, and I understood he looked at this speech in preparation, to Nixon's Forgotten Man. I think he must see some parallels to the late 1960s when there was a very divided country and people who felt left behind. And those were certainly messages that Nixon early on embraced to try and bring the country together. I would make one different observation than the rest of you. I think while it was at a 30,000-foot level, while it was broad strokes and it was not specifically targeted to people who were fearful or people who were upset, You could make the argument it's American nationalism, but I think his goal was to say we're all Americans. And when he's talking about the child in Detroit and versus Nebraska, he talks about unity. They share the same breath of life. I think he was making the attempt to say that we have commonalities that we can embrace and we can come together. And, you know, he focused on some policy issues about radical Islamic terrorism, as he's always talked about, and infrastructure. But he said the phrase we all knew he would say, which was to make America great again, which, whether it's through strength or wealth or pride or safety, the issues that he tied to it, he was delivering the message that he wants all Americans to be proud of the country they live in.
Well, let's take a look at that, because that's really the challenge going forward. As we look back on presidents who have been able to successfully evoke that patriotism as a common narrative, FDR in the middle of World War II, where America was facing a crisis, in the middle of the Depression, where America was facing a crisis, after 9/11, George W. Bush, when America was facing a crisis, this sense of unity naturally comes out of a sense of patriotism. But now, when people have a very different sense of the country, how challenging do you think, Carolyn Ryan, it will be for him to knit together these divisions that were so evident during the campaign?
Well, it's extremely daunting. I mean, one thing that was really striking to me talking to the reporters who are there is that they feel like, compared to past inaugurals, that there's much more kind of tension and less sort of a sense of celebration, national celebration, than you usually see on these occasions. And one thing that was quite vivid and kind of potent was the remarks offered by Chuck Schumer, which seemed to be his own definition of love of country and patriotism. And so for Donald Trump, I think, as you know, he was elected despite very high unfavorables, very broad unpopularity. This is a moment where it seems like perhaps he missed an opportunity to offer some more healing words, to ask for the help of people who didn't see eye to eye with him during the campaign. I think it's going to be a very daunting challenge. And I think those divisions, especially according to the reporters who are there, are more raw than they've seen in the past.
Todd Zwillich, thinking about those approval rating numbers, which are down, and looking out at the crowds, which are nothing like the crowds we saw in 2009 for Barack Obama, what do you think that says? I mean, the weather isn't cooperating here, but what do you think that says about the passion of this moment for most Americans?
I think it actually goes right along with some of the themes of what President Trump talked about in his address. He painted the picture, as he did throughout the campaign, of a country that he sees in dire straits, in a bleak condition. And as you said, John, he talked about the carnage of the country. Well, that type of narrative about where the country is at, you would expect not a great deal of enthusiasm for any leader, even a populist leader who managed to win an election despite being outperformed in the popular vote. So it's always been difficult to turn out throngs and throngs of supporters in a unified country against the backdrop of a negative vision of where the country is at.
Glenn Coffey, the language of carnage, American carnage, does that strike you as something that you're seeing in your own community that needs to end now? I mean, it may not be the exact right word, but was there a disconnect there at all in what Donald Trump was saying about the negative state of America right now?
I don't know that I share the view of carnage, but I think it speaks to the view of people that are upset, that they think for the first time in their lifetime the opportunities for their kids or their grandkids aren't what they experienced, that it didn't seem to be – the trajectory was going the wrong direction in a lot of the Midwest from our perspective. And I think he was capturing that with the images of the rusted, empty buildings and people's perspective that things have to change about creating jobs here at home, and that we have to have that focus.
Glenn, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. You guys have a great day.
Carolyn Ryan, I'll give you the final thoughts in thinking about what's happened today and what's likely to happen over the next 4 years.
Donald Trump's essence is that he's a salesman. He's easily hurt. His ego is easily bruised. His views are strikingly elastic, and he is enchanted by success, or at least the appearance of success. When he said today, "I will never let you down," it felt again like he was selling something to the American people. It's not that it's not sincere, but that's the essence of who he is. He can be seductive as a salesman, but he has some of the limitations of a salesman. And the question is whether he's going to be able to broaden his inner circle, broaden his aperture on the country and all the competing interests in Washington, and be a successful president. I don't think we should underestimate him, but we should also not underestimate the challenges he will face.
Carolyn Ryan is senior editor for politics with our partner, The New York Times. Carolyn, thanks to you. Thanks again to Glenn Coffey. And thanks to Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, who's been out there since the very early morning. Thanks, Todd.
Of course, John.
Thanks, John.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.